There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
First and foremost, I want to thank everybody for making the All Elite Wrestling Double or Nothing Recap show a top five most downloaded since the start of 2019. I personally have had some reservations about doing more than just WWE stuff, but based on that one show doing fabulous numbers, I feel good that we can do more than just being a default WWE is the top story. Yes, my name is James Stewart. My voice is back. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available in bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, I'm very excited that we can be more than just a WWE podcast. So let's start with New Japan Pro Wrestling. They had their second biggest show over the weekend, and they had a few other shows around that. Two big takeaways for me. First, Jon Moxley became the new IWGP United States Champion, defeating Juice Robinson. I thought this was an outstanding brawl, which went all over the building. It had an edge, and the finish came following a second jumping double-arm DDT, which Jon Moxley is calling the Death Rider. Robinson kicked out of the first double arm DDT, and on the second one, Moxley spiked him, absolutely spiked him. I'm not sure why I love the fact that Moxley was wearing amateur wrestling shoes, but it was a nice little detail, a nice little touch. Moxley felt edgy, dangerous, and not goofy, and Death Rider indeed.
Yeah, and you know, just a whole new brand for him. I thought it was, I didn't see the match, okay, but read up on it. The whole Death Rider theme is really cool. And I think it's, you know, again, he's rebranded himself, and it just grabbed the attention of everybody here. And it kind of gives new life to New Japan, not just from, we'll talk about Jericho from this past weekend too, but just with the addition of a superstar here in Jon Moxley. And another thing too, Jimmy, I think a lot of people were watching this, especially after his recent interview with Chris Jericho. So much was told in that podcast, which was an excellent, excellent interview. Wrestling fan your whole life, make sure you listen to it. But it's really, you know, and after listening to it, now we know why Jon Moxley is doing what he's able to do in the ring. He's passionate about things. He gets a good pop for you know, being out there, and he's damn good in the ring. And he's able to put all that together. That's why he's going to be such a great talent in a new promotion.
So 2 weeks ago, Jon Moxley was on Talk Is Jericho. Most of us have listened to the interview. Some of us have listened to it multiple times. It was essentially Moxley and Jericho sitting in Moxley's kitchen table in Vegas, where I'm sure Renee Young was thrilled with what she was hearing because she works for WWE.
Yeah.
Overall, though, I took that podcast as Moxley Ambrose was very grateful for the WWE platform that he was given. He just wasn't a fan necessarily of the creative process. And he, Moxley Ambrose, and Vincent Kennedy McMahon had a different viewpoint of how the Dean Ambrose character should be presented. He's sharing his story. And wow, what a story he shared. The big takeaway that I took out of that podcast was the fact that he wanted to retrain and reseed the wrestling business. If he left WWE and there was nothing else there, he wanted to bring in new talent so badly that he was going to train people from scratch. That's a hell of a quote. That's a hell of a quote.
Yeah.
And that just speaks to how much he seemed to dislike the creative process and disagree with how WWE was presenting him to the audience.
Right. And also, you know, I don't think we really realized, or if you didn't know or have a feeling, like how kind of depressed he was. He was pretty down in the dumps personally. You know, just not happy with the way he was dealing. His character was given a chance in the ring. And like you said, he wanted to develop new talent, but just being buried. And it just, it brings you into the brain of Vince McMahon as much as you can get in there. His, you know, firsthand experience telling him, I don't like this idea, or who came up with this. And Vince says, oh, it's going to be great, pal. You got to, this will be awesome and stuff like that. And you know that I'm going to say Dean Ambrose here in that scenario was not happy. He didn't like doing that because he didn't believe in it and he wasn't passionate about it. You don't believe in something, it's not going to be a good thing. And, you know, there's one thing I wish he went into detail with, but it was the night in Providence where Roman Reigns had to rescind the Universal Championship. And that was a night where there was a lot of discussion about him turning heel that night there with the Shield and going up against Seth Rollins, where, you know, that had potential, I thought, to be a rival for a long time. But obviously that did not happen. And it just kind of spiraled shortly after that because it was the Royal Rumble where he found out that he told Vince, I'm out. I'll see you later. So it wasn't too long after that where everything changed drastically for him.
Well, it sounded like from the podcast when he said that there were 15 Raws left or something like that, and he started counting days.
It's counting down.
So if you backtrack, his last date would have been just after WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been shortly after that. It would have been shortly after that. So
with that Shield reunion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Shield reunion, the last match with the Shield, he gets $500.
I know. What a joke.
$500, which, as he described, that's what they get for just walking in the door.
Unbelievable.
What I found interesting was that goes counter to what Bruce Pritchard has been saying for years on his podcast about Vince making sure that he gives a bigger payday to those who are leaving as a way of saying, see, you shouldn't be leaving, pal. These are the type of paydays that you should be getting. So unless Bruce had a dated reference, or Bruce was protecting Vince, or Vince just changed, or Vince just wanted to give Dean a bad payoff, or, you know, there's a concern on my part that Vince is too far up the food chain and doesn't pay attention to payoffs like that unless they're brought to his attention. In the case of Chris Jericho a few years ago, he's spoken openly about the payoff he got for working Fandango in WrestleMania. He wasn't happy with his creative. He wasn't happy with his cash. And post-WrestleMania, Vince McMahon made sure that Chris Jericho's cash represented the appreciation that Jericho had, that Vince had for Jericho for doing a match that Jericho didn't want to do. Because right. Jericho went out there and did everything that he could.
Exactly. And it's just, again, I think, you know, if you're able to get a one-on-one interview with Vince McMahon, God bless you. But this is probably the closest you're going to get just to be able to get as close to Vince by listening to that interview with Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley. It was fascinating. Great, great podcast.
A lot of people are comparing that one to the CM Punk podcast. Mm-hmm. The biggest difference for me was Jon Moxley, Dean Ambrose still loves wrestling.
Yeah, he does.
CM Punk is done with wrestling.
He's out.
Now, whether that's changed some 4 or 5 years later, we'll see. Everybody still thinks that Punk's going to come back at some point. I don't know. As time goes on, it doesn't seem that way.
Chicago all out. Yeah, all out. Yeah, we said it last year, too.
Yep, we thought that was, and he did a Pro Wrestling Tees appearance, and he'll do appearances if you meet his price.
Sure.
You know, if you want to start a GoFundMe page, Mike, we can contribute to that and see if we can get CM Punk to Boston. But
I'm down with that.
The second takeaway from New Japan's weekend of shows was the Chris Jericho Okada match for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Thought this was an excellent match. The finish was the same as the Kenny Omega Okada first fall from last year's Dominion. I thought the story was good. The funny thing is that when they went to the finish, I had that moment of, that's it, I wanted more, which is good and bad. One, it was a good match, but two, I wanted more. I kind of expected a little bit more. That was just me, and then they transitioned to what I think is going to be the one of the main events at the Tokyo Dome, because they have two Tokyo Dome shows to fill, and that is Chris Jericho versus Tanahashi, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, and when would that be? Would that be the one in January?
Yeah,
or,
January 3rd, 4th, 5th, whatever their time frame is for the Dome. That'll be they essentially took the if I remember this correctly, they took the Tokyo Dome and they're doing it over two nights instead of one, which they've never done before. At least I don't think they have ever done before.
Okay, all right.
So they'll do Jericho Tanahashi one night, and maybe they'll do a second Jericho match against somebody else the second night.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. And, you know, I did see the match, too. I thought it was a good one. Similar to your thought, too, Jimmy. The ending, I thought we'd get more out of it. I mean, I think, you know, just like any match, there were down periods of it. It was 38 minutes long, and I thought that there were some times where, okay, are they gonna what's gonna be the finish here, what's gonna be the go home? It was just kind of like a classic wrestling match. But you know, Okada, he was looking for the leap over the barricade at one point, and then he ate a code breaker, and then they go back into the ring at one point too, and then Jericho tried to get the power bomb on him and couldn't quite get him up, and then got him back in the barricade. So that got a little exciting there. And then, of course, the ending when he just went right after Okada won the match clean. Again, that sets up with the, you know, afterwards, the Tanahashi interference or saving him. That is good right there. So, yes, would I like more? Absolutely. I wouldn't even be surprised if they make this a tag team match of some sort. Jericho and, I don't know, do you put him and Moxley together maybe against Tanahashi and Okada just as a
so
little
So, Mike,
filler?
This is your WWE programming coming through.
I know.
This is as you kind of branch out from just being in that WWE circle, you'll understand that there are different styles, there are different selling points.
Well,
generally speaking, if New Japan does something like that, it's a random 8-man tag team match. Right. And it's just a bunch of guys against a bunch of guys. They could do something like that, but with the fact that I think Jericho is just working limited dates, I don't think that they would do that.
So it's funny you said that with the WWE mindset, because it's exactly what I thought about watching
Raw. You're programmed.
Yes, that's it. Exactly. Same thing. You get the tag team match as your main event every week on Raw. It's typically how it is. So you're right. It's a program thing. But I don't know. I would love to see
especially
a fatal four-way.
Especially with Jericho. So they don't do many of those type of matches.
Well, you get the star power.
So Jericho's... off the top of my head, I think Jericho, he did Kenny Omega in the Dome. He did Naito. He did Evil. He did the NATO rematch. There might be, and then he did Okada. I think he's done five matches in New Japan, but he's been there for like 7 or 8 nights because he shot the angle with NATO. He shot an angle with somebody else, whether it was Evil or whether it was something with Omega. I think he's been to Japan like 8 times.
Okay.
And that's 5 matches, I think, if somebody wants to scream in their car and correct me, God bless. So I don't think that they would use him for a tag team match per se. Mm-hmm. And also with Jericho, he's not doing the free show that AEW is doing.
That's right.
He's not doing that. He's going to fight on pay-per-view, All Out in Chicago for the AEW championship against Hangman Page. So Jericho's working schedule, I don't think, is going to be wasted on a tag team match. I could be wrong, but yeah. I don't see it based on what New Japan does and how Jericho's dates seem to be very limited to New Japan.
When you get the chance to get Jericho, you're going to go one-on-one main event matches. I get it. I get it. But I don't know. I mean, that's why I thought with the two star powers here, maybe a way to kind of stick it to the WWE a little bit when you have both the talent in there from your former competitor, from your actual competitor, more or less, or a different promotion. So I don't know. I would love to see something along those lines there, but it looks like we'll have to wait a little bit for the Tokyo Dome for when that match does happen there with Jericho and Tanahashi.
And they could do Jericho Okada one night and Jericho Tanahashi the other.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my 4th week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Before we get to the WWE stuff, the early buy rates for All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing, more than 100,000 buys between digital streams and traditional pay-per-view. That is excellent. That is a step in the right direction. And little nugget, I'll pause for a second. Little nugget, those who listen to us in the Boston area, because Mike and I are Boston-based, mm-hmm. AEW has plans to come to Boston.
Ooh, do we have any timetable?
It doesn't feel like they have specific details yet, mm-hmm. but from talking to somebody, Boston is in their future plans. So AEW right now is in their plans to do some Boston area shows or a Boston area show. But excellent. They don't have the details, so I can't tell you details, but AEW is in the Boston is in the plans for Boston.
Nice.
One other thing I have in my notes before we get to, because I want to talk about NXT TakeOver, and I know it was a few weekends ago, and then we'll do the Saudi show. But this relates to Jon Moxley, Dean Ambrose. Mm-hmm. This is a conspiracy theory. This is not an I believe moment. This is nothing like that. My conspiracy theory is Beth Phoenix, who is now doing NXT commentary, is being groomed to replace Renee Young on Raw.
Yeah.
And that's not because they're going to fire Renee Young, but maybe her contract comes to the end and WWE says, thank you for your service, but we're going to move in another direction.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I was similar, thinking the same thing. I'd be like, you know, she's actually really good here on the NXT. I thought she did a fine job with the commentary, and I'm like, I could definitely see her on the main roster calling matches on the big time Raw or SmackDown. And that's, you know, you put two and two together, and it just makes perfect sense that that could be the beginning of the end for her. It's, you know, here it is, a revolutionary scenario where she was the first ever female commentator for a Raw and a SmackDown or pay-per-view. So history will always be on her side, but I'm with you there. I could very easily see that happening.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
The Dave McGilvery Finished Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
WWE stuff, and I'm going to start with NXT TakeOver, and that was from...
Oh, which you were at, by the way.
I was at
James
that show.
Stewart.
I was...
Before, how was the atmosphere? Because it looked like a really cool building. Like, I think the smaller buildings, I know I said this after the SmackDown in Providence, I would love to see an NXT TakeOver in a Providence or a building like that, or a Worcester, but that had the same kind of feel as like a Dunkin' Donuts Center, didn't it?
I think it was Bridgeport, Connecticut. It was Webster Bank Arena, which I've been to before. It's about a 5,000-6,000 seat building, I think.
Yeah, minor league hockey.
Sold out, or, you know, so sellouts in most venues are 93% of the building, not including club seats, boxes, stuff like that. So if a place announces a sellout and you see empty seats, it's because the rules of a sellout in business are 93% of the building. So
right.
If you see a situation like what happened WrestleMania weekend, where there's a sign on the locker room door saying no comps, that means that is 100% sold out. That was the case for Mania, NXT, Raw, WrestleMania weekend. So that's a small little like business nugget. But right. NXT TakeOver Bridgeport, the 25th TakeOver, was awesome. I thought Brooklyn was a touch better from WrestleMania weekend, but if you want to tell me that Saturday night was better, I won't fight you on it. Adam Cole won the NXT championship, defeating Johnny Gargano. Another blowaway match. Again, if you want to tell me that Brooklyn was better than this one, that's what I think. If you want to tell me this one was better than Brooklyn, I won't fight you on it. They're two of the top matches in the company's history. They've been that good. They went for pinfalls. They tried to win the match. It's kind of a simplistic theme. It's something we've talked about a lot about AEW, is that people are trying to win, and the championship is on the line, and both competitors are actually trying to win the championship. Novel concept, I know. I at one point thought this thing was going an hour time limit draw.
Oh,
because it kept going. And I, in the back of my mind, I knew that the 2 out of 3 fall match went about 40 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So when the match ended, I was like, yep, perfect ending. And I think overall, they righted a wrong. So I thought that Adam Cole should have won in New York, in Brooklyn. But they didn't, because Gargano had to win for his moment, which was going to originally be Ciampa. And then I think they went back to Cole because they realized that Cole should be the champion based on how the crowd feels about it and how Cole is doing merch money and so on and so on. And I think, generally speaking, Gargano is better as a chaser anyway.
Yeah.
But there were so many times in this match where I thought it was over. Gargano eats a super kick. Gargano goes for a dive to the outside. Cole hits the Panama Sunrise, the Canadian Destroyer, from the ring apron to the floor. And then the urgency of which he got Gargano back in the ring, I thought that was going to be a finish. And, of course, like, now that you've hit that move, where do you go from there?
Right.
Bunch of reversals, just, you know, one key detail to the finish that I loved was Gargano's knees collapsing. Because part of the story of the match was Cole working on Gargano's knees. So Gargano escape, Cole gets out of it, throws elbows at Gargano's knee. Cole targeted it. And then he hits the Panama Sunrise, last shot, new champion. Just everything that's great about pro wrestling. Just everything. And again, yep. I think they righted a wrong from NXT Brooklyn. It's not a major wrong. It's not a major wrong. It's just, in my mind, it was a wrong.
Yeah, see, I disagree. I think that was the perfect ending for the NXT Brooklyn. I thought that was great how you had Gargano win, and that was a great match. That is a consideration for me.
Mike, that might be the best match you've ever seen in your life.
It's up there. I think it could be match of the year. It could be. And you know what? I just thought that it was a perfect finish because Ciampa comes out after with the way that they he was happy for him, more or less, or I'm sure it was bittersweet, but the way they told that story. And, you know, if he is ever it looks like he might be cleared, which is crazy, because he was in the building for TakeOver, right? He was there for TakeOver 25?
Yeah, he did pre-show analysis. I'm not sure that he's cleared.
Yeah,
they may be grooming him for an announced position just in case.
Yeah, just to be ready. And, you know, it just, if that is to ever happen, you have that right there. Yes, he is clear for non-ring action. We know that. That's for sure. But that is always there if he is ever ready to go for in-ring action. I love that. But this was good. I mean, if you have Gargano winning Brooklyn, obviously you don't have him as a long-term champion here because you wanted to put the title around Cole, which I was more than fine with. And again, this match, this may have surpassed the NXT Brooklyn one. I mean, that's how good these two competitors are. I got to watch it one more time before I make a final decision if this was the better match instead of NXT Brooklyn, because it's pretty damn close.
Like I said, Mike, like, yeah, they're 1-1A. I won't fight you if you thought Bridgeport was better than Brooklyn. I thought Brooklyn was better than Bridgeport, but again, like, it's good stuff. It's really good stuff. It's another case of NXT really delivering on a pay-per-view and on a pay-per-view main event.
And Jimmy, I know the other matches on the undercard, especially the opening match with Matt Riddle and Roderick Strong, I thought that was fantastic. It started off a little slow, but, you know, Riddle, just to do what he does barefoot, it's unbelievable. Really get to appreciate that. So many counters and reversals between the two, and I thought it was Matt Riddle's best performance ever. And, you know, I'd like to see him get more of a push in NXT.
Think so. He ate his first defeat against Velveteen Dream in New York for the NXT North American Championship. And I think that they did that in a way to protect him. Like, we put you in this match. We have to beat you.
Right.
But we're going to beat you in such a way where it's like, oh, that came out of nowhere. And because the match was as good as it was, okay, Riddle's been beaten. We're over it. Now where do we go with him? And I think the destination point is going to be NXT Toronto, where it's going to be Riddle against Adam Cole.
I think that's fantastic.
And now whether Cole beats him or not is a whole other story, because I think that's a possibility on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in one of their 4-way, 5-way, 6-way matches, he may have been on the verge of being beaten by Adam Cole.
Yep.
And there was something that interrupted it, or there was something. But there's a story to be told with Matt Riddle and Adam Cole.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's something there.
Yeah, and he's got all the parts to be a major star, as does Velveteen Dream. And somebody else who jumped out at me at NXT Bridgeport was Tyler Breeze.
Yeah.
The crowd believed in him as a star and a top star of that promotion. Work-wise, we can debate if Breeze was as good as he was in his match against Liger a few years ago at NXT Brooklyn, mm-hmm. but Breeze versus Dream was excellent. Crowd made that match, made that more. Like, I'm a Tyler Breeze fan, mm-hmm. and it just, again, it jumps out at me the difference between the NXT audience and the main roster Raw and SmackDown audience.
Yeah,
maybe
that was
about presentation of characters and things like that, but just like that NXT crowd is just there to enjoy wrestling, whereas the Raw SmackDown crowd, like, they're there, they want to be into it, and it's just the energy's just warped out of them.
How big was the pop with the selfie together after?
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah,
it was good stuff.
It was pretty cool. I like that.
So,
the Dream is good. Velveteen Dream, I hope he gets called up to the main roster, maybe after SummerSlam.
There's a talent evaluator in wrestling who I asked a very open question to about who, if they could build around one star, who would it be? And the answer was Velveteen.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And I thought that answer before. And, you know, to have somebody who actually gets paid to evaluate talent tell me that too, like, that made me feel good.
Sure.
And he's 23 years old. He's got all the makings to be a top game changing star if he's protected in the WWE system.
Kid's on his way.
So, one final note from NXT Bridgeport. What I'm calling Britt Baker and the musical chairs. So I was in the friends and family section of the NXT show, and Britt Baker was seated in front of me. Adam Cole's mom and dad also came over and sat in the row in front of me. And before the tag team ladder match, a WWE person came over and apologized for seating those three where they were. And the quote was, "Hope you weren't bothered too much," because a few people came over, said hello, asked for a selfie. And by the way, I did too. I said a few words to her. I took a selfie, and that was it. So my reply to this WWE person was, we were all very polite and respectful, which he smiled at. And Britt, by the way, to her credit, said, "No, everybody was fine. What are you talking about? Everything's
right."
Good. So they essentially, so the friends and family section was pretty empty. It was just spatterings of people, which can be the case sometimes where people won't make the trip down there. So Stephanie McMahon came out and sat in the very first row, which would have been to the left of how you're viewing the show off the hard camera.
Right.
And she was there with her kids, and just, it was like the whole young McMahon family. So they had put Britt Baker and Adam Cole's parents on the other end of the row. And at one point they started moving them closer together. So at one point they were five seats away from each other. And then before the main event, they brought all the seat fillers down. So for those who don't know, WWE will give free tickets to people and call them seat fillers. And what they do is during the show is they will go wherever one of the producers directs them to so that it looks like the building is full. There are no empty seats in the view of the camera. So right before the main event, they were going to do a one shot of Stephanie. A one shot is where it's just her on camera and, you know, pretty much nobody else except like a little bit of background. So they brought all the seat fillers down. And what happened was when they put the seat fillers in the first row, they moved Britt Baker and Stephanie McMahon next to each other.
Yep.
So for a few minutes before they actually did this one shot on Steph, while they were running videos, they were playing musical chairs with Britt and Adam Cole's family trying to make sure that Britt wasn't in the shot. Now, as it turns out, she was in the shot in the very far corner of the screen. But from my point of view, it was very entertaining watching them try to get Stephanie and Britt Baker apart, even though on their interactions, they're very polite to each other. So two random fans got to sit next to Stephanie McMahon and have a time.
Yeah, and can you imagine what the producer was saying through the earphones to the floor director during? This is all during a package, right?
So it wasn't anything like rude or chaotic as far as communication. Yeah, it was just a lot of moving.
Oh, sure. I'm sure there was
and
chaos.
Everybody handled it professionally because everybody knew what happened.
Of course.
You know, you've got Britt is Adam Cole's girlfriend.
Right.
And she's there to see him win the championship.
Right, right. And looking back on that, hearing that right there, that's pretty funny. Honest mistake, but, you know, I'm sure there were a few things said to the floor director. Come on, get him out of there. Hurry up. Let's go.
And one of the things that I bring this up for is, because not everybody in WWE is at war with everybody in AEW.
No.
And that is my point in bringing this up.
Yep.
Most wrestlers, they all know each other. They've all worked together in some form, most of them, and they all get it. And there might be this, you know, this business thing where Vince and Chris Jericho have an issue, or Triple H and Cody have an issue.
Right.
But I think those are the exceptions. Because they're at the top of the food chain, they stand out more.
And you know what, Jimmy? It's going to be like that for a while with a lot of these guys not having an issue and knowing each other so well, too, because it's so new. And they've worked together for, you know, such a long time. And now they're on their own separate brand for not such a long time. So it will be like that for until they really do take off and build talent within or whatnot.
So I want to transition into, and I purposely saved this for last, the Saudi show on Friday. WWE presented a show that was to be better than WrestleMania. And quite frankly, if WrestleMania 35 wasn't 7 hours, it might have been as close to a perfect WrestleMania as we've had. And realistically, 35 is in my top five favorite WrestleManias ever. Today, you might ask me tomorrow and it might be number 6 or 7, but today it's top 5. This show on Friday might be in the conversation with a WCW pay-per-view on the bad side of things.
Yeah.
Undertaker beating Bill Goldberg, which we all knew that there were going to be issues with this match. And logic tells me Taker is done. He's got nothing left. Goldberg, at least from that SmackDown promo and from his look, might have something left. But the problem is he knocked himself out during the match with The Undertaker on Friday. And it looks like in-ring he might not have anything. But if he's healthy, maybe that's changing. But the fact that Goldberg is a WCW guy and was talked about on that show as much, we knew Undertaker was beating him.
Yeah.
Which there's a logic hole there. If Undertaker's done and Goldberg might have something left, you don't beat Goldberg. But whatever. That's a whole nother story. I don't want to destroy this match like much of the internet did, because it's not their fault.
No.
This is a premise that I joke about all the time, is that they're carnies, right? Mm-hmm. So if the WWE is a circus, and if somebody wants to pay Vince McMahon $50 million for one show, Vince is going to travel where he needs to travel, put up his tent, and entertain the person who paid $50 million. So you have two proud, longtime athletes in Bill Goldberg and The Undertaker, who are presented with one of, if not their highest single payoff in their career. And how do they say no?
I know.
That would be hard for me to do.
Yep.
So you're putting these two proud athletes in a situation where they can make so much money and do what they've done for so many years. They can't say no to that. And maybe in the back of their mind, you know what? It's not going to be as great as it could have been, but it'll be good enough. And then you get the disappointment look on the face of The Undertaker and the report that they got into it behind the scenes and Bill Goldberg was knocked out. And that's what happened. So I don't blame them, the competitors. I blame Vince.
Yeah.
He took the money and he put employees that he's paying in a position to fail, not to succeed, but to fail. And that's not good.
And also, Jimmy, you know, we talked about this last year for the Greatest Royal Rumble and even the show in what did it turn out to be? What the heck? Crown Jewel, the one in November where, you know, there were political ramifications on that because of the journalist. And that became a whole news story. Should the show go on? And sure as hell enough, it did. And, you know, you talk about this for not being good for the talent. Another thing that Vince is screwing over his talent on, what's the hottest thing right now? I think it is, at least. What's the hottest thing in the company? What would you say for WWE?
The hottest thing in the company.
The best thing going for them.
Brock Lesnar with the briefcase trolling people.
All right. Besides that, maybe not the hottest, but it's right up there. It's been a huge thing the last few years. What has been kind of like the main event of WrestleMania this year? The women's division. The women.
Oh, you the can't, women can't go.
They can't go. You can't put them in the ring.
So the government approved a match, and then they got there, and they changed their mind.
But then they had them, you know, they were doing promotional things, wearing the black, and, you know, like Alexa Bliss went to the Children's Hospital, I think, with Natty, and Becky Lynch was there too, I think. But it just stuff like that. Like, you're burying, you're not burying, but you're not giving them a chance to, you know, showcase their talent too. And there was some outrage with a lot of the females right there. So I that's not fair to them too. So if you're going to say that, it's not fair to these guys being put out there like that. It's not fair to the women. That's my issue with it. As for the Undertaker Goldberg, give me 1998, 1999. I am 1,000% in on those two guys right there going at it. That's a dream match. It's like the match we never saw, the Undertaker Sting. You know, that's a big one right there we never got. But again, the ship sailed, and I think the ship clearly sailed here with these two being at the age they were. Yes, I do think the Undertaker can still work, but he needs younger talent with him. He needs, I think, a perfect guy would be a Finn Balor. I mean, we saw what John Cena did for him at WrestleMania 34.
So that's like the key right there.
Yeah, you need
young. You have to find somebody who can work with the Undertaker and put him in a position to succeed. And
that's
8 minutes, 32 seconds with Bill Goldberg was not that position.
And that spear that Goldberg gave, or the jackhammer. Holy cow. I was like, are you kidding me? This is a disaster. And then, you know, the rumors about shouting behind the scenes after being angry at each other, or Undertaker mad at Goldberg. It was a recipe for a failure. And again, two star power names, not taking anything away from them, but the finish, oh man, awful. And that's what will always be remembered for this match, how bad the finish was. And if you look at the Undertaker carefully, not that he's always the happiest looking guy, he could read the frustration through the line on him there.
Somebody who's on quite a run for himself is Shane McMahon. He beat Roman Reigns. And I mention this because it's an important win for Shane. And it feels like he's being groomed for a WWE championship match. And I don't remember if I've said this on the podcast or if I left this in the Take Development office a few months ago and I just left it in a text message to you.
Yep.
But I've kind of felt like this might be a direction where it's Shane versus Kofi in the SummerSlam WWE championship match. And Shane might win the WWE championship. Hang on. Let that sink in for a second. Shane Brandon McMahon at age 49 might be the WWE champion. And keep this in mind. Vincent Kennedy McMahon won the WWE championship at age 54.
Yeah, but he had it for a week, right?
Because he gave it up.
Yeah.
But they might be grooming Shane for a run with the WWE championship.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that, Mike?
Mixed feelings. I mean, Shane is awesome in the ring. I don't like it. Don't like it. I think it's desperate. I think that you're burying talent on the card, underutilizing them. And, you know, he's the boss's son. He can pretty much do what he wants. He can be in your big time matches, hardcore matches. He's probably one of the only guys that can do that. But I don't like it, though. I don't think it's fair to guys that have worked hard their whole life. It's almost like a silver spoon scenario, Jimmy. You're born with it, and here you go. Son, you're the champion because you're a McMahon. No, I don't like it. Let the guys who have earned it have a shot. Not saying that Shane won't give Kofi a good match, but I don't like it. And it's funny you said that, because I did see Justin Barrasso's note after the Super Showdown that may happen. He would love to see Shane as a champion. I was shocked. It's like, what are you thinking? No, as a fan, I'd be disgusted.
So here's why I like the idea.
Of course you do.
One, because I came up with it months ago. But two, Shane McMahon might be the most over person on the SmackDown roster on the villain side of things. And the way he's been this Weasley villain, he barely gets by The Miz on back-to-back shows. He has helped to beat Roman. He's still getting a strong reaction. He cuts good promos. He's got the McMahon silver spoon that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
He's the number one villain on SmackDown. And well, would you rather see Kofi have another match with Kevin Owens, get no reaction? We love Dolph Ziggler, but I don't think that Dolph deserved that spot based on how the crowd reacts to him.
See, I want Kofi to go up against, and I'm fine with that. I have no problem with him going up like a Drew McIntyre as a heel. I'm fine with that, being a big guy. Bring Braun Strowman to SmackDown. Make him a heel. Go up against him. I have no issue with that.
So you're doing Kofi against Giants. Is that the best way to utilize Kofi?
I think it's better than Shane McMahon.
Because I would rather see... I'm still waiting on the New Day turn, which maybe they're waiting longer term, or maybe they just don't do.
Yeah.
But I would rather see Kofi have great matches with people than have him do the underneath story that they did with Rey Mysterio, where Rey wins the title at WrestleMania and he's fighting all people who are bigger than him, with the exception of, I think he fought Eddie Guerrero at the TD Garden a few nights after he won the championship, or maybe that was Eddie who defended against Rey. It was something like that. But
right.
I would rather have Kofi fight people who are his size and his league as far as in ring. I still think if promoted properly, Kevin Owens should be the number one bad guy along with Sami Zayn on SmackDown because of the wild card rule.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like that they're going to go in that direction. And it feels like it's going to be Shane as the next big, which maybe that ends up being Kofi chasing Shane.
Have him chase Shane and, you know, build up Shane's stable here now with Elias and Drew McIntyre. Get them over a little more. And maybe that's the best thing for those two guys there as their solo career goes forward. And good for Elias. He deserves a push, too.
Yep.
I think he does.
I agree. 100%. My last note for the Saudi show relates to Triple H versus Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
Good match. Felt a little long. Coming in at 25 minutes, which was more than double the next longest match, which was the Intercontinental Championship. I bring it up because I find it interesting that Randy Orton beat Triple H.
Yep.
And maybe Randy Orton is a future challenger for Kofi Kingston. Although if you look on Twitter, it looks like they might be going a different direction with Randy Orton and Finn Balor, or, you know, Randy Orton and somebody else.
Right.
After Dolph gets through his series with Kofi, it might be Randy, it might be Shane. We'll see. But the bigger question, which we posed on Twitter, was Randy Orton, overrated or underrated? Mike?
Well, I think overall, underappreciated, I think, is a better word than underrated. So I'm going to say underrated. And, you know, I was looking at an article today just going through the archives. There was one from Bleacher Report in 2010. I won't read the whole thing, but there was just something that really stood out to me. And Jimmy, I know I talked to you about this before we started recording, but he was a 7-time champion before 2010. And that was already at the time more than Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Randy Savage, and equal to that of The Undertaker. And at that time, the question was asked, does Randy Orton really deserve such prestige? And those right there, I mean, you can say what you want. They're not on mine, but that could very easily be someone's Mount Rushmore of wrestling. I'm sure three out of the four, you got to put Hogan there somewhere, maybe Andre the Giant. Go ahead. But that's right up there, those guys. Is he up to that caliber? I think that was during a time when the WWE consistently had the championship turnover more often than a lot. And not saying that they don't do it still to this time, but Triple H was a champion so many times. Look at John Cena. He could break the record. And then Randy Orton at that time, too. But Randy Orton, he's forgotten as a, I guess, a high amount number time champion because he's in the, not the shadow, but I think the underappreciated versions of John Cena, who has had more limelight than him. Triple H, who has had more limelight. The Evolution thing, it wasn't Randy Orton's stable. That was Triple H and Ric Flair's stable. The best thing I thought Randy Orton ever could have had was the feud with The Undertaker, because that really propelled his career. It was great, and that kind of brought him off to the races. The feud with John Cena was good. But overall, I think he's been underappreciated. Unfortunately, I can't name you a Randy Orton match that sticks out in my mind maybe within the last 4 years. I really can't. I just can't do it. I do know that he was in the WrestleMania 30 main event with Daniel Bryan, but that was Daniel Bryan's show, Jimmy, in the Superdome, okay? People, you may not remember that he was in that match, Randy Orton. That was a Daniel Bryan production. Randy Orton, he'll put on a good show. He's a great in-ring performer. Overall, underrated for his career.
In real time, Randy Orton is one of the most overrated performers in my lifetime of watching wrestling.
Okay.
I was all in on Randy Orton when he started and was moving up the ranks. Legend Killer, the program with Mick Foley, him beating Chris Benoit for the world title at SummerSlam. I was invested. I was there. I thought this is the next great wrestler in history. And then Triple H beat him a month after he beat Benoit at SummerSlam. And I was out. Because I thought, what don't I know? What am I missing with Randy Orton that they would do this to him? And then they would have Batista take the WrestleMania main event spot. Because the story should have been Randy Orton chasing Triple H to get revenge, and it turned out to be Batista. From that point on, I never reinvested in him. And I'm going to make the argument that I was wrong. And I took Randy Orton's career for granted. And it was a listener to the show, David, on Twitter, who wrote, if you want to build up a superstar from the ground up, he'd look like Randy Orton. Orton's going to be a first ballot WWE Hall of Famer. And based on his resume, he might be a top 10 WWE performer of all time. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's 39 years old. He's 6'5", third generation. He's entering his 20th year in wrestling. At the time he won the championship from Benoit, he was billed as the youngest world heavyweight champion in history. He got 12 more championship runs, in total 13. Intercontinental, U.S., multiple tag, Money in the Bank, two-time Rumble winner. He was ranked the number one wrestler in the PWI 500 in 2008. He's done movies, TV shows. WrestleMania main events are world title matches. Bray Wyatt, Bryan and Batista, Triple H, Cena and Triple H, Mysterio and Kurt Angle, other notable opponents, AJ Styles, Seth Rollins. He was in a match with The Shield, Kane, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase Jr. He's been in Money in the Bank WrestleMania matches. Undertaker, he teamed with Batista against and Ric Flair against The Rock and Mick Foley.
Right.
So 20 years, almost 20 years. 14 matches that have had some type of value on paper. Now, whether they delivered or executed is a whole other story, but going into a WrestleMania, he had 14 matches that had value. His SummerSlam resume, strong. Chris Benoit, Brock Lesnar, Hulk Hogan's last WWE match. Orton cashes in on Daniel Bryan after Bryan beats John Cena for Bryan's first WWE championship. That's the case to be made that Randy Orton is a top 10 WWE superstar in history. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it as a fan, I should have been more invested in Randy Orton. He checks all the boxes of reasons why I like pro wrestling and wrestlers. And in real time, I missed it. And that's on me.
Well, you know, Jimmy, that's really good analysis of that. And I really, for some reason, I don't know why, but I really started to take an appreciation to him. Not that I didn't appreciate him before, but more appreciation to him about 2 years ago. I was sitting with you and the Wong father at a SmackDown show in Providence. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was talking to you in between a match. I said, what do you think of Randy Orton? And you said something along the lines, very similar like that, shorter though. Yeah, he's good. You know, I appreciate him, but, you know, nothing special. I'm like, I just really have taken more of an appreciation to him because he had been consistently in a performing act, always in the ring. 20 years, that's longer than John Cena at this point. But again, why he's underrated, when you think of pro wrestling, people think of John Cena over Randy Orton. It's just the fact of the matter. It's like Hulk Hogan over the Macho Man, okay? It's how it's always going to be for him. That's his legacy, I guess. He's not going to be that top echelon guy, but I've really appreciated the work that he's done in the ring. And yeah, he doesn't cut all the promos all the time. He doesn't get the biggest pops, more or less, but he's been consistent, and I appreciate the work that he's done. And you know, third generation superstar, that's a pretty cool thing to carry on your family legacy too.
And a finishing move that everybody knows and has RKO. Been a GIF or a meme or yep. whatever social media video form you want to say, it's been out there.
It might be, I mean, the Stone Cold
RKO
Stunner.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, the Stone Cold Stunner might be one, and that's maybe 1A. You know, you can do that on anybody without even kicking them. Go ahead, get the RKO. It's easy.
So Randy Orton, I missed out on. That's on me.
And I can safely say I've been a victim of Jay Stu's RKO once or twice.
I still have the briefcase. I'm going to cash in on you one day and take all of your championships.
Well, you didn't do it last week when you came over.
Nope, but, you know, just got to tease it. Just got to tease it and control you for a while now.
Eyes in the back of my head.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5thesportshub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. We will talk to you next week.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with a solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do. The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.